This podcast is sponsored by FATT, F-A-T-T, a range of keto on-the-go snacks, including cookies, brownies, chocolate bites, bars, Fat Jacks, and muffins. FATT snacks are delicious, natural, and always free from sweeteners, fillers, and seed oils. Find FATT snacks at www.livefatt.com. That's LIVEFATT.com. Use the code FABULOUSLY10, that's 10, to give an extra 10% off one-time purchases, not valid on subscribe and save. Welcome to the Fabulously Keto podcast, aimed at improving health, vitality and quality of life, eating real food in a ketogenic lifestyle. I'm Jackie Fletcher and I'm based in the UK.
And I'm Louise Reynolds, an Aussie currently based in Bangkok, Thailand.
Each week we will be bringing you guests who share their stories and discuss a range of topics which we hope will improve your health and well-being.
Many of the guests, like us, came to keto for weight loss and have stayed for their well-being, numerous health benefits, and because they are living their best lives. We hope you'll be inspired to incorporate these ideas into your own health journey, so that you can feel better than you ever have before.
Thinking about starting keto? Take a listen to episode number 2, What is Keto and How to Start? Welcome to episode 184 of the Fabulously Keto podcast. And first thing I have to tell you today is a big thank you to Stephanie Steph Hewitt, who has signed up as a monthly supporter for the podcast. Steph's pledge has come at a brilliant time. A couple of weeks ago, when I introduced Ahmed Malik, I mentioned how my circumstances have changed. Up until now, I've been able to fund the podcast because my husband works. I call the podcast my expensive hobby. Unfortunately, my husband's work is finishing at the end of March 2024, and this will leave us with very little money coming in. I know we have a sponsor for the podcast, but that only covers some of the ongoing costs. I now need to bridge the gap between the costs covered by FATT and the costs I pay for on an ongoing monthly basis. I also want to cover some of my time to allow me to continue working on the podcast. Your support is going to be pivotal in sustaining the Fabulously Keto podcast. Whilst you can support me on Patreon and buy me a coffee, I have set up some support options on my website. Whether through a one-time contribution or recurring monthly pledge, starting from as little as £1 or $1, every bit counts. I understand our community spans the globe, and for this reason, I offer payment options in both US dollars and British pounds. There are various options for you to choose from on my support page. I'm excited to tell you about the Super Fabulously Keto supporter option. I have created an accountability option, especially for our podcast listeners. For £10 or $12.50 a month, you will have your name read out at the top of the show. And whilst you're a member, you will join our private community for our Super Fabulously Keto supporters in a private Facebook group, where you'll be able to interact and build supportive friendships. You will join us on a monthly call. The monthly call with me will focus on topics of interest regarding real food, low carb, intermittent fasting, extended fasting, keto and carnivore. We will use the time to discuss topics, be accountable for your goals, and answer any questions you might have. This will be a private group and call for the Super Fabulously Keto supporters. To support me and the Fabulously Keto podcast, please go to fabulouslyketo.com/support. So let me tell you about today's guest. Today, I'm speaking with Marisa Moon. Marisa was recommended to me by Laura Rupsis of episode 109, but I had such a backlog of interviews but I hadn't contacted Marisa yet. And Marisa contacted me directly at a perfect time when I'd started recording again after Christmas. If you do any fasting, time-restricted eating, or intermittent fasting, you will enjoy this episode. This week, I've done an extended fast, so some of the ideas have come in handy. Let me tell you about Marisa. Marisa Moon is a National Board Certified Health and Wellness Coach, Master Primal Health Coach, and Intermittent Fasting Coach at marisamoon.com. Ranked as Google's number one intermittent fasting coach since 2018, Marisa just published a number one new release on Amazon titled Not So Fast, The Smarter, More Gradual Approach to Intermittent Fasting Benefits That Last. Marisa is recognized as a leading expert in the fasting community, especially when it comes to flexible intermittent fasting strategies that work in real life. Through her relatable coaching style, Marisa helps frustrated dieters put an end to the confusion about what's healthy and finally experience results that last. So let's go and hear from Marisa. Welcome, Marisa, to the Fabulously Keto podcast. It's fabulous to have you with us today.
Fabulous. I'm excited to be here.
And we always ask, where in the world are you?
Well, I'm technically in Northwest Indiana, the Cedar Lake area, but I'm 45 minutes from the Chicago downtown area. So I always say I'm from Chicago and Indiana.
That's really cool because I guess where you are is a bit more countryside and then you get
exactly
into the city.
Exactly.
It's like us, you know, an hour on the train or even a 45 minutes and we're in the center of London.
Perfect mix of both.
Yeah. I was in Chicago in 2018.
You were?
I was. Only for a few days. So let's start by finding out how you came to your paleo way of eating. What brought you there? Did you have any health issues? You need to go.
Yeah. So I'm 41 now, but it was when I was like 28, 29 that I was getting really fed up with some IBS symptoms I had. It was like debilitating at that point where I didn't know when I was going to go to the bathroom, but if I did, it was going to be very unpredictable, fast, and embarrassing. And I had gas problems, all kinds of things that was just making me humiliated and feel like grossed out with my own body. And I had this feeling it had to do with something that I ate. And I really got lucky stumbling across a podcast at this time because, you know, that was 12, 13 years ago. But I happened to find one that was talking about the microbiome and gluten sensitivity and dairy intolerance and all this stuff. And I was like, what are these women talking about? And they were talking about how healthy fats are important. And I was eating really low fat. I dabbled in and out of a keto diet actually before this time, but I never thought that like long-term that was good. There wasn't really much information on keto. I just learned it from a bodybuilding friend and thought it was a good way to cut weight. But so all of a sudden I'm getting these signs that I have a gluten intolerance. And that was like earth shattering to consider because I'm a foodie. Like my family's from the restaurant business, chefs, caterers, we're all Italian on both sides of the family. And I just took pride in being someone who will eat anything and everything. And food is just like a big part of my life. So when I thought I got enough evidence suggesting my symptoms were from a gluten intolerance, I was like, maybe I'll just stop eating it for a couple weeks and nobody has to know. And at least I can rule that out if it doesn't work. But like immediately, I was relieved of my IBS symptoms as soon as I stopped eating gluten. I mean, at that time, gluten was in every single snack and every single meal that I had because I was like thinking whole grains were really healthy, kashi cereals and granola bars and things like that were really healthy. And I thought because everything I ate was whole grain that I was doing things right. So I was probably like hitting my gut with an aggressive amount of gluten by that time in my life. But when I felt the relief, it was just so transformative. I started learning about the paleo diet. A friend asked me if I'd heard of it because I told him some of the things that I was trying out. And I never heard of paleo at the time, but as soon as I picked up a book on that, I was like converted, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
It just made so much sense to me. Like, I wondered why I had been so naive the whole time as a dieter and eater, like reading ingredient lists, which I did. I did read ingredient lists, but I just thought that maybe there were people looking out for us designing the laws around these food labels, yeah, or what's allowed in our food. I thought, like, they have families too and they have kids, so they're not going to allow these dangerous things in our, like, how freaking naive I was. But then all the pieces start coming together and I realize, okay, I love to cook. I'm really lucky. I already love that. I love knowing where my food comes from. So this is all feels like very right for me. And I just gradually, you know, continued down that path. Luckily, my husband was very open to it. And I just went all in eventually. I was a food blogger, started sharing my recipes to be gluten-free and spreading the word that this could happen to anyone. And over time, I eventually became a health coach since 2017. And that's kind of how the trajectory began.
Excellent. So you're a primal health coach as well, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my first certification, certified primal health coach, because the primal, you know, template, Mark Sisson's book, Primal Blueprint, you know, those really rang true to me. And they were like slightly less strict than the paleo template was at that time. You know, primal sort of makes room for learning about your bio-individual tolerances and what makes for a complete diet with your culture, your tradition, which may include dairy or may include legumes and lentils. And if they're properly sourced or properly prepared, that they can be part of a complete diet that is nutritious. And that appealed to me, as well as just Mark's delivery and a lot of his content, the way that he's very relatable and practical. And so primal was a big inspiration. That's actually why I moved to the country. I wanted to raise chickens. I wanted to learn how to garden. I failed at both of those, but I'm still trying to be more primal.
I want to have chickens, but I just do not have the hours in the day to look after them or the will to look after them. So
mm-hmm.
I try and find neighbors that have eggs that I can buy from them.
Nice.
So, and now you do a lot of intermittent fasting. You've written a book about intermittent fasting. So I'm sure most of our listeners will know about intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
But just explain what your, because, you know, I talk about time-restricted eating and intermittent fasting being slightly different. What's your take on intermittent fasting?
Well, I kind of stumbled into intermittent fasting. You know, the primal and paleo communities did bring it to my attention early on. I was blogging since 2015, so I was hearing about it since then. And it appealed to me to learn bulletproof fasting because it included bulletproof coffee. And I wasn't like on this weight loss journey or anything. I was just trying to optimize my health and my brain power, but I loved food. So I was always like at this, like, you know, contemplative sort of phase, like, does fasting appeal to me? Because I just love food. Like, why would I willingly like not eat? Mm-hmm. But then I, you know, at around the same time I discovered I had IBS, I was diagnosed with ADHD. And in starting my blog and trying to like pursue this new interest of being a health advocate, I was finding that my ADHD was getting in the way of me being productive and, you know, really producing things out of my ideas. And so that led me to think, how can I improve my ADHD without solely relying on medication? So I tried a lot of different things, including things in my diet. And it just dawned on me one day, like, learning about the brain, learning about ADHD impairments, and learning about health and digestion from my IBS experience, it just dawned on me that my brain and my digestive system are competing for resources when I'm demanding digestion and demanding critical thinking to get my work done.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of natural that I was like, okay, if I can drink bulletproof coffee and it's still considered fasting, then I can just keep working and not eat at the start of my day and I'll get more done. And it was like, totally obvious, without question, I got more done, without question.
Yep.
I didn't have any, you know, negative side effects that some people experience trying fasting. I think because I was already fat adapted, I was eating a paleo-ish, primal-ish lifestyle. And because I was gluten intolerant, I was naturally reducing the carbs that I consume each day. And I really believed that we consume too many carbs as a nation too. So I was being pretty mindful of that to reduce in my diet. So intermittent fasting came effortless to me. I could have my bulletproof coffee, no problem. And down the line, I was realizing other people were interested in intermittent fasting, especially bulletproof fasting. And so I started teaching it in workshops and introduced my four-step method at the time. It was called the four-step, a step-by-step method to start intermittent fasting, which evolved into my reset method. And that's what the book is based upon. So since 2018, I've been teaching coaching intermittent fasting, Google's number one ranked intermittent fasting coach since 2018, which has been an amazing organic, result. Okay. But it's because at that time, nobody was coaching intermittent fasting. I was actually surprised anybody was interested. But the reason I was excited to talk about it is because I realized fasting doesn't have to be as scary as it sounds, or it doesn't have to make you feel like crap, or you don't have to use willpower to get your way into it if you just ease your body into it and train your body to do it and be flexible with the circumstances of your life, depending on the ever-changing priorities that your body has or that you have. And so eventually I just discovered, like, my point of view is drastically different, but so needed in the fasting community, because now some experts are starting to come around. We're in 2024 now. Remember, this was back 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021. Still, everybody was like, you can only have water and black coffee, and you have to do 16 hours or you're not going to get any of these benefits. And I just saw drastically different things with my clients and had drastically different experiences in my life. And then over time, I realized it doesn't even make sense to be rigid. It doesn't even make sense to be so routine with it, because we're trying to mimic ancestral patterns and ancestral relationships with food and fasting. And none of that would have been so predictable, and none of that would have been so rigid. And so, it just gave me room to explore and trust myself in that maybe there's a lot more to it than we were seeing in the industry.
Yeah. I think it's quite important to be flexible and not rigid. So for me, some days, like this morning, I had a coffee with a teaspoon of butter in it and a little drop of milk. Another day, I might go right through to lunchtime, not eating anything or drinking anything other than water. Other days, I'll have breakfast. I think it's good for your body to not know what's coming.
It is. It's because your body has to adapt to things that are unexpected. And many of the benefits we experience from, I would say, strategic fasting or intelligent fasting would be the adaptation. It's because of the hormetic type stress that we induce from going without food, or that we achieve that same hormetic type stress from exercise, from all sorts of things, from cold therapy, from sauna therapy. I mean, these are stressors that cause a cascade of reactions known as hormesis, where we see beneficial genetic and cellular processes initiated to meet the challenge of that stress, which in turn benefits the entire organism, the human. But yeah, when we abuse it, when it's too rigid can be a form of abuse. When it's too aggressive, when it's not appropriate for your ever-changing circumstances, like for women, that can be the week before your period, or for everyone, it can be after a night of poor sleep. When you abuse it under certain circumstances, your stress threshold has changed and hormesis is not going to respond favorably. In fact, it often ends up resulting in maladaptation. So, undesirable responses and reactions, because we've pushed beyond the threshold of where those benefits can be achieved.
Yeah. So when you, because you were saying about bulletproof intermittent fasting, tell us what your bulletproof, is it coffee? What do you drink in the morning?
Yeah, well, I've gone through phases of everything, matcha, green tea, black tea, even dandelion root. I quit caffeine many years ago because my genetics revealed that I'm a slow caffeine metabolizer and I have a high resting heart rate, low heart rate variability, and I take stimulant medication for ADHD. And so all of these things combined were telling me the last thing my body needs is caffeine. I really have done my best to minimize the use of stimulant medication, but I want to make sure my sleep is optimized. I want to protect my heart rate, my blood pressure, all of those things that can be worsened by abusing stimulants like caffeine or those medications. And so it was great to quit that, but decaf, Swiss water extracted Arabica coffee, organic beans is still my go-to choice. I tried all those other things, but nothing makes me as happy as a cup of coffee. So I have my coffee in the morning And I actually don't do Bulletproof right now. These days I'm not doing it, but I did it for many years. And I coach a lot of people to try their coffee that way because it's like the best transition from like the standard super creamy, super sweet coffee to trying to do something that's like, you know, fasting oriented or, you know, more nutritious for your body. It feels like you're having a rich, you know, cafe latte that you got at some beautiful boutique or even a Starbucks like coffee shop, and people don't feel neglected. And that's how I started coaching it that way, because I was like, I don't care what the fasting industry says. I know that fat doesn't trigger insulin. And I also know that Bulletproof coffee is satiating. And so if people can ease their way into fasting by having Bulletproof coffee, because it gives them something to look forward to during the fast, because it makes them feel satiated during the fast, we can always change that later. Let's start with something that feels rewarding, because yeah, it might even help them achieve the results without removing it. And that's what happened with a lot of my clients, was they still achieved 30 plus pounds weight loss of their goals, even though they were drinking Bulletproof coffee during their 16 hour fast.
Yeah. And if they're women, they've probably tended to not eat fat.
Exactly.
And so hormones need fat. And so just getting them to have fat is a good thing.
Oh my God. Yeah. They loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it.
So what are you telling them to put in their body?
So when people start, I always say, let's keep the MCT oil, a liquid MCT oil, not powder, for starters, because I don't know enough about the powdered version yet. It's kind of a new invention. So liquid MCT oil, 1 teaspoon, to give your gut time to acclimate, because as many of your listeners may know, you need to build up a tolerance in your GI tract for MCT oil. It doesn't get absorbed through the GI tract. And so it's going to, you know, be eliminated right away, which can be sort of an urgency if you're consuming more than your body's used to, which results in you having to run to the bathroom when you're drinking your coffee.
Yeah.
So you start with 1 teaspoon of that. But you do want to work your way up. There's a lot of benefits, enhanced fat burning around the clock when you consume MCT oil, especially during a fast. So I will have them work up to 2 to 3 teaspoons, which is 1 tablespoon. But anyway, so they start with 1 teaspoon MCT oil and 2 to 3 teaspoons of butter, unsalted butter, which is almost 1 tablespoon. I just cap it at 1 tablespoon because even though it's not going to disrupt their fast, it's also going to provide exogenous fats, you know, that their body can soon learn to be making from their own body fat. It's not going to be the same fatty acid profiles or the same exact result, but I've found it's great to start with more and then start cutting it out later if we want to try and break through a plateau if somebody reaches one. But that's it. And then their approved sweeteners are pure stevia, which again, the fasting community makes it like you can't have stevia. And I think it's because of a couple of studies I've seen where they use stevia products that are popular, like Stevia in the Raw, for instance. This freaking brand, the first ingredient on their stevia packets is dextrose or sugar, literally sugarcane. Or dextrose, even though it's a stevia packet and it says zero grams of sugar, you know, 0 calorie sugar-free sweetener, and it says stevia. So you got to read in the ingredients on the stevia, and those, you know, would explain why people would have an insulin response if they're using those types of sugar. There's more. There's Purevia. There's several brands now. Those jerks, they're just sneaking in ingredients, and it's like nobody's reading it because it says stevia on the box.
Yeah.
So I tell people, as long as it's 100% stevia, it's okay if it has glycerin in it. If you're doing like a liquid stevia that you can drop in your, that's why those brands fill it with sugar, by the way, because it makes it behave more like sugar granules that you can like sprinkle into your drink. Whereas if it's pure stevia, it like clumps and the powder is like very fine powder, and it's just not what the consumer is used to. And so they're trying to make it like something you're used to. And they end up filling it, if you're lucky, with erythritol or xylitol, which are usually perfectly fine in a fast, depending how much you use, but one packet or so is going to be fine. So everybody was permitted to use that, or allulose. Allulose is another sweetener that's not going to disrupt a fast and not going to prompt insulin. And so those are the two ways that they can sweeten. And between all of those ingredients in their Bulletproof coffee, they're very happy and they're very willing to work their way up gradually from 12 to 16 hours over time.
So do you first start, so you introduce the intermittent fasting. Do you ever get people to do longer fasts? And what would you say is typical starting fasting time?
So everyone that I teach who's coming from no fasting to my method starts with 12 hours, everybody. And some people, it's very effortless and they're going to easily be at 13 hours the next week, 14 hours the next week. But I usually only see that in people who are already fat adapted. So they've been eating lower carb lifestyle before starting, or they're really young, like under the age of 30, or they are men under the age of 40. A lot of times those people adapt very readily and they're excited. You know, even just a go-getter type personality who's extremely determined, you know, they're just going to be, have the adrenaline and everything to like make it through this with a lot more enthusiasm. Whereas some people fear being fasted. You know, they might say, okay, I trust you, Marisa, I'm willing to do this. I'll say, it's okay, we're going to go slow, like no big deal. Like you're going to feel comfortable. And I will tell your listeners right now, anytime that you are intermittent fasting and you don't feel comfortable during your fast, it's time to break your fast. Yeah. Because that's a sign that you are probably going to enter into that maladaptive phase, or it's going to cause you to overeat or binge when the eating window opens and all sorts of undesirable behaviors as a result. So I meet them where they're at. We start with 12 hours. That's a good assessment of how your metabolic health is. And then once you're comfortable at your current fasting window, you know, even let's say this person's already doing 13 and they're really comfortable. A lot of people want to just jump to 14 or 16 because that's what they've read in some articles that you're supposed to do. But I'm like, we're not leaving 13 unless you've gotten like a week in a row under all these different circumstances in your life where 13 worked.
Yeah.
So that's how I know you've adapted to 13. It's effortless, even though you had a crazy day at work. It's effortless, even though it's the weekend. 13 is comfortable for you. It's time to move to 13 and a half. We don't just jump to 14, not because you can't do it, but because that's where more mistakes are going to happen when we jump too much, because you have to decide when you're going to eat in your workday. You got to know that food's going to be prepared. Like a lot of times people get tripped up because they're like, I was planning to break my fast at 11 because we had that conversation. Like I'm ready for 13 and a half hours. But then I realized, shoot, I have a meeting at 11. And then when am I going to eat? And so I didn't know what to do. And so I just didn't eat. But then I was like starving when the meeting was over. And this guy at work offered me pizza. And I just said yes, because I didn't have any time to order food. So it's like all these variables come together to make you realize like you really do need baby steps to just make this something that is going to become a lifestyle for you and something that keeps you feeling confident that you can do it.
So my question to you is, so somebody stops finishing eating after supper, for example, dinner, whatever you call it, and then they go the 12 hours. Are they having their bulletproof coffee if they want it within that time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you're counting that they're still fasting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, they're definitely not getting... Okay, I want to be careful how I say this. If let's say we're talking about someone who's doing 16 hours, okay? So if the person who's doing 16 hours is adding butter and MCT oil to their coffee, they are going to get a more rewarding experience during their fast that's going to allow them to more comfortably fast 16 hours or even go 17 or 18 hours because of it. But even if they don't and they just go 16, the MCT oil has been shown to increase lipolysis, so increase fat burning throughout the rest of that entire day, just because they had MCT oil.
Yeah.
And it enhances ketosis, so that I think it's really great in this beginning phase when somebody's becoming adapted to fasting, because it's almost like training your body and training you for what to feel and how to metabolize energy so that ketosis just becomes like a more natural state for your body.
Yeah.
People just love it. I mean, the feedback that I would get when I do group programs with MCT oil, because I never make anybody start with bulletproof coffee or fasting just because I'm a fasting coach. You know, a lot of people I'll tell they need to back off and they shouldn't be fasting, as a matter of fact. But the same thing with bulletproof coffee. Like I have another hack that I'll tell my clients they can use nut pods. So nut pods is a miraculous, plant-based creamer that water is the first ingredient, but it also has almonds and coconut. So it's like an almond coconut creamer, but in 4 tablespoons or less, you're still at 0 grams of carbs and 0 grams of protein.
Yeah.
And so they love it because they can just pour it right out of the bottle into their coffee, like a creamer, instead of blending it like bulletproof coffee. So regardless, I've got clients starting in all these different scenarios, but I will always pull it out if they hit a plateau. I think it's just about them achieving enjoyment during the fast. And then if somebody's not achieving the results they want at the pace they want, I'll say, let's pull the stevia, let's pull the bulletproof coffee and switch, try black coffee. And I've got all types of hacks for that too, because a lot of people don't like black coffee, but there's lots of things you can do to make that more enjoyable.
Yeah. And you do get used to things after a while.
Yeah, you get used to things after a while and you should change it up. Exactly.
Yeah. I never used to drink coffee, but I could, but I always had sugar in it, even up until recently. But in the last 6 or 8 months, I just dropped the sugar. I don't know. You know, no one told me to.
Awesome.
I could have had it a hot, you know, I'd have a quarter of a teaspoon of sugar. It's not going to kill me. And the amount of carbs I eat, it's not going to influence very much. But I just stopped. I just forgot to put the sugar in.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, the longer the fast is, the less any of these details matter. That's something, you know, I teach people over time. You asked a little earlier, like, is it always just intermittent fasting? Is it always these short fasts? Well, I just explain to people, depending on their goals, like if you're getting to 18, you know, hours fasting and above, especially if you're exercising in a fasted state, like a lot of the rules fly out the window because your body is going to calibrate sort of based on it's already switched over metabolically. So you've switched over to making ketones for energy and depending on those for energy in this fasted state. And so if you had a teaspoon of sugar or you had, oops, I ate a couple of blueberries for my kid's lunch. Did I screw up my fast, Marisa? People would always ask me that. I'd be like, no, just keep fasting. First of all, our ancestors, of course, if they stumbled across a couple of blueberries, they'd be eating them. A couple of nuts, they'd be eating them. But we also have plenty of research like the fasting mimicking diet or just in general, like how many calories people can still get the benefits of fasting even though they're ingesting nutrients. And it's because your body has these intelligent like nutrient sensors and genetic sensors that are deciding like, is this enough nutrients right now? Enough glucose, enough this so that I can just switch over metabolically to go back to depending on glucose instead of using ketones for energy? No, most of the time it's not going to be enough. Your body's going to be like, nice try. I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing. And yeah. So you're going to stay in a fasted state. You know, even if you get like a tiny surge of insulin, like we're going to get that when we have, you know, a stressful moment, somebody surprises us and walks into the room and we're shocked. We get glucose dumped into our bloodstream. And if it's going to require insulin to get shuttled back into your cells. And so it's not about being perfect. It's just about being aware of how the circumstances work for you in your current situation that is ever changing.
Yeah. I interviewed, I don't know if you know her, Nayeri Misisian, and she's a type 1 diabetic, and she encourages people, type 1 people, to fast. And she said, but if you get a hypo, you take a glucose tablet and you carry on fasting. You know, you bring your blood sugar back up. It doesn't break your fast. You just keep going. And I have another friend, listener, podcast guest called Maya Sutherland, who she will do very long fasts. You know, her last one was 16 days, but she will still eat a few things, you know, in a day just to see her through. But, you know, to all intents and purposes, she's still fasting because the amount of calories she's taken in is so minute.
I mean, I will say probably the most beneficial type of fasting as a lifestyle would have been alternate day fasting. So like fasting completely one day for 36 hours and then eating a normal 3-meal day and then fasting. That's what alternate day fasting is. But in the alternate fasting like community, it's also like you can have up to 500 calories on your fasting day. Men can have up to 600 calories. And, you know, there's amazing benefits to that share benefits of fasting and benefits of caloric restriction, but you're also not being too consistent, which helps mitigate the downsides of being calorically deficient for too long. And it gives the person the freedom to also have something to eat that day. Like if they want to sit down with their family, you can very easily have a salad or a soup that is less than 500 calories and feel like you had a complete meal. But the thing I don't like about that is it's very hard for most people to do. Like it's this totally yo-yo lifestyle. And we have all of these like you know, things built into our neural circuitry and our DNA telling us to find food and eat it whenever we get the chance. And so you're like using restraint and willpower on these fasting days, and then you're pigging out the next day and then using restraint. I don't think we're set up to win with that in our modern environment.
Yeah. I used to have a host with me, Louise. She used to host with me. And back in, I think it was 2021 or 2022, we decided we were going to do 100-day alternate day fasting.
Wow.
She was going to do every other day, and I was doing 3 days a week to fit in with what my family were doing. And she got on tremendously with it and ended up doing 180 days. And I, after 9 weeks, had to give up because I felt so terrible. And, you know, maybe I'll try again one day. I don't know.
What do you attribute that to? Like, what kind of conclusions did you draw about your own experience?
I don't know. I just didn't feel well. I didn't feel good. I didn't feel good. And I carried on for quite a while not feeling good until I got to the point where I thought, this is silly. This is not.
Yeah. So I think the dieting community and just in general, like advice about fasting and keto makes us think that we just need to will our way through something, or, you know, if it's harder, it's better. If it's just so wrong, for especially the context that we live in, all the stressors that we're under and all the things that are going on that we're unaware of in our bodies. You know, Not So Fast, the name of my book, it really came from me realizing how many people I need to tell to slow down, take a step back and be careful. And it's like, I think I said this earlier, but fasting should always make you feel better. And so if I just happened to be your coach or your friend at that time in your life, Jackie, I would have been like, stop doing that. Like, it should make you feel better, not worse.
Yeah. And it just took a while for me to realize that actually I didn't feel good. And I think maybe I wasn't easily metabolizing, I'll get it out. I wasn't easily metabolizing the fat. Mm-hmm. But I think my body might have been struggling to do that, even though I'd been keto for years.
Wow.
I just think, and I'd been, 16, 18 hours most days. I was used to it. I'd done 36 hours fast. I'd done 40-hour fast, but there was something, you know, I used to do 40 hours twice a week, but there was something about the 3 days that was different. And I don't know what it was.
Wow. So. And there are a lot of things that we don't consider that can change based on, like you said, it was something about just that third day that like pushed your body past this threshold. And it could have been also like some research that you'll see about fasting says it improves the gut. And some research that you see about fasting says it worsens certain GI conditions. And some people are like, why do I get diarrhea all the time when I'm fasting? I'm like, what? You know, like at first, this was just shocking to me until I heard Dr. Walter Longo explain that in certain guts, in certain individuals, and in certain circumstances, he would see that the body, you know, a lot of us heard of autophagy during a fast, like that's something a lot of people strive for. So just to preface for what Walter Longo's findings were, autophagy, this body's like our body's recycling system, using up old junky cells or cell parts it no longer needs and recycling those into feeding other cells and growing new cells. So usually you thinking this is something really beneficial, but when we're fasting in certain individuals, their GI tract is not being used, right? They're just doing a water fast, let's say. Their body is thinking, I don't really need this lining in the GI tract because I'm not digesting food. And so I'm going to recycle those cells and use this energy to heal other areas or to meet demands of other areas. I think when people are under eating protein, we see that a lot. When people are, you know, fasting with an already compromised gut, we start to see things like that. So that when they do eat, the GI tract is not prepared for that. So then they get IBS-like symptoms or terrible bloating. And it's like too aggressive of a shift, like going from no food at all to all of a sudden eating like normal. And so a lot of my clients, they have to be on digestive enzymes, or I'm introducing them to HCL and the possibility they might have low stomach acid. Some people need to have a snack before they break their fast. So I'm like, you know, maybe you're thinking it's time to break your fast. Start snacking on some blueberries, start sipping on some bone broth. It depends on the individual because, you know, some people can have a handful of nuts where others that's too aggressive for their gut. Yeah. You want like your brain to get the idea that food is coming. You want your mouth to start sending these signals and saliva and enzymes that food is coming. And so all the digestive juices start flowing. Bonus points, if you have something like bone broth or something like vinegar, pickles or a vinegar-based salad dressing, digestive bitters, all of that is to stimulate the gastric juices and prepare the gut that food is coming. And so it's just fascinating how everybody's response can be different. And I don't know what you were experiencing at that time, but I think it's powerful that you know that about yourself now.
Yeah. And I've been thinking recently I should give it another go because that was 2-3 years ago. Can't remember if it was 2021 or 2022, but it was about this time of year. And things change, you know. We're not the same people that we were 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe now would be another time. But I just like eating.
Yeah.
I like eating too much. So what's a day of eating look like for you?
Well, what a good question. I usually eat twice a day. And my first meal of the day, I don't eat the same thing ever. It's just not me. That's not how I am. And that's how I try to teach my clients. And in the book, you know, there's a whole chapter on the importance of variety and diversity in your diet. That's absolutely critical, number one, to encourage diversity in your gut microbiome, which makes it, you know, have more integrity and it's just better for your brain, everything. But it also just remember different plants and different, you know, from different plants from one another and different animal products from one another have different nutrient profiles and different toxin profiles. And so when you have a lot of the same thing all the time, even if it's a nutritious food, you're limiting yourself to that array of nutrients, that composition of nutrients. And then also works for toxins. Like, you know, yes, avocados are very healthy, but you have a lot of them. You're going to, you know, expose yourself to a lot of this one toxin instead of diversifying your nutrient intake and diversifying your toxins in your gut microbiome. But so for me, you know, the first meal might be, if I'm in a hurry, a prepared meal service like Balanced Bites or My Metabolic Meals. Those are the two meal delivery services that I use. I can get low carb meals from them that taste almost as good as if I made it myself, which is really important to me. I like to cook. And so I don't want some like shitty frozen meal that tastes like crap. It's just not going to cut it for me.
Yeah.
But leftovers, like a big leftover person for lunch. If I don't have meals ready to go, it's a quick salad with a canned sardines, canned like filleted hamachi or canned salmon. That's pretty much it. And then dinner is something I cook or leftovers. I love to cook. So it's usually vegetables and meat that are inspiring the dish. And then if I feel like throwing in some carbs, my husband's from Hawaii, so we'll have white rice. We'll have a mix of cauliflower and white rice, or we'll have, I'm Italian, so we might have lentil pasta, or my cousin works for an Italian distribution company that brings imported Italian goods. And so I'll get to try all these new gluten-free pastas, which for me is like a real pleasure because I basically have not had tortellini, stuffed Italian pasta since, you know, 13 years ago when I had to give up gluten. And just last week I had it for the first time because my cousin was able to get this sample for me from his company. So if there's a, you know, a time my husband and I want something like that, we will absolutely have it. But I'm just so mindful of how fast those carbs add up and turn into a habit for me. I think that's something we all need to learn about ourselves is like, at what point is it like you've made too many exceptions and now carbs are on your mind again all the time?
Yeah.
Or you're using carbs as a shortcut to build your meal. My cousin, that same cousin, gave me 3 bags of these gluten-free tortillas. And they're huge, kind of like the kind you would use to make a burrito. And I've never seen those before because without gluten, they're not pliable. And so they break. So most gluten-free pizza crusts, most gluten-free tortillas are small. And so he's like, no, the guy even showed us a demo, like he froze them and then he's rolling them up and they're still not breaking. And I was like, oh my God, this is such a breakthrough. Is it primal or paleo ingredients? No. Is it flour-based? Yes. I mean, it's still only like 22 grams of carbs per tortilla, which for me, is like the perfect range. I tell people, if you're doing carb moderation, you're not like strictly keto, or if you're fasting with carb moderation, you can still achieve ketosis. I tell them around 20 grams of carbs is like, you know, the threshold where you're going to teeter into that, you know, excessive glucose range otherwise. Yeah. 40 is like the absolute max. I tell people, like, your body's, you know, safe postprandial insulin response can only safely metabolize 40 grams of carbs in that 2 hour, 2.5 hour window. So when we're eating 50 grams of carbs, 60 grams of carbs in one meal, no wonder you're in a food coma afterwards, because your body's like, oh my God, we don't have energy for anything else. Calling all resources.
Yeah.
We need to sit here and process all of this glucose, and it's going to take a while.
Yeah. And I'm guessing in your book, as a primal health coach, you don't just focus on fasting and nutrition. There'll be other things that you focus on as well.
Yes. I'm so glad that your instincts told you that. That is, again, another reason why I call it Not So Fast, because if you're not sleeping, doesn't matter how good you are at fasting, your body's not going to be giving you benefits or results from that. In fact, things can get a lot worse. There's a lot about hormones, you know, stress, cortisol, just lifestyle factors that are going to influence whether you favorably respond to fasting or not. And mindset. There's a ton of mindset stuff in there. You know, people just automatically think all or nothing. They think, like, I already screwed up, so I might as well just eat whatever I want, or I'm not fasting on the weekends, so the weekends just become cheat days. Or there's this, I have a section called the 5 types of hunger in the book to help people understand, like, a lot of times we're not actually hungry. It's can be one of these 5 types. I'll explain them now if you'd like.
Yeah, sure.
There's head hunger. I'll explain each one. Head hunger, mouth hunger, heart hunger, stomach hunger, and anticipatory hunger. And so head hunger is the one most of us are doing when we're mindlessly snacking, or we're snacking while we're at work, or snacking after we already ate. It's when your brain is looking for stimulation or reward, or you just want to deviate from whatever is boring or not captivating your attention enough. And so this very much happens when we're at our desk, or we're just kind of bored at night and we don't want to go to sleep yet, and aren't stimulated from the show we're watching. That's head hunger.
Interesting.
Mouth.
Yes, I call head hunger something different.
What do you call it?
So head hunger for me is if I'm fasting and my brain is telling me I want to eat. I want to eat something. It's not that I'm hungry per se, but my brain is saying, I want to eat, I want to eat, I want to eat. And I call that head hunger.
That's awesome. It is. We're kind of talking about the same thing, because it's really that your brain is distractible and food, it's on its mind. Food is on its mind.
Yeah.
And it also could be because the guy next to you just microwaved his Chipotle leftovers and you're smelling it. That's also head hunger. So it's really just these cues, environmental cues or situational cues, that is telling your brain it would be more fun to be eating right now.
Yeah.
And so mouth hunger is, I want to change the taste in my mouth. I want something crunchy. I want something cold. I want something salty, refreshing. That's why people like to chew gum during their fast. And sometimes that's why we want to break our fast, because we've had this coffee taste in our mouth for a while and we're like, oh, I really just want to eat something. It's because you want to change that, or you want to feel a texture, and that's perfectly natural. And then heart hunger is emotional eating. So this is when we're comforting ourselves with food. We're telling ourselves, I deserve something. I deserve to eat right now. Or you're pissed off because you can't express yourself in some circumstances you can't control and you want to eat. So it's really emotional eating that is heart hunger. I'm lonely, you know, for me, a lot of like self-pity or shame can be involved there. And then the stomach hunger is physical hunger. When we have that empty feeling in our stomach or growling stomach, which passes, that's the beauty of it. You know, if you tell people, if you're hungry, it's okay, like during a fast, they're usually talking about physical hunger pangs. And they do pass. You know, when you first start fasting, you're going to have a hunger pang at the time that you normally would eat.
Yeah.
Especially the more routine you were, you're going to get a hunger pang at that time. And for most people, that will pass within 15 minutes, and then you will no longer experience that hunger pang after 2 to 3 days. So it's gone very quickly after making these changes. But then anticipatory hunger is one that surprised me to see a lot in my clients. In certain people, they are they start to get worried or anxious about when they will eat and when they will have an opportunity to eat or what they will eat. So it becomes very distracting. Like, let's say right now in my time, it's 1:45. And let's say I have another call at 2:15, but I was planning to break my fast between 1 and 2 and I didn't plan it well. So then they'll be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know what to do. Like, I was like nervous. I'm not gonna be able to eat. So between these two calls, I go run and try to eat something. And the only thing I see are the bagels that my wife bought and they're on the counter. I'm like thinking of a certain client in my mind right now. That's why I said my wife. And so you just go eat the bagels, throw some cream cheese on it and eat that. And that was like your meal. And then after the 2:15 meeting is done, you're like, oh my God, I didn't eat enough. All I had was a bagel. So it just turns into this like snacking behavior that just goes throughout the whole window. And it's because of anticipatory hunger and poor planning. And so I tell people, if it's distracting you that much, like this same client would have probably had that anticipatory feeling before this call. And I tell them, if it's worrying you that much, that's a sign to just break the fast. Like, it's not worth the energy and the will that you are dedicating to that, because it can manifest as more stress and results in glycogen dumping glucose into your bloodstream anyway. And I'm like, it's giving you a bad experience. We want all good associations with the fast. And so this is teaching you to be adaptable. Oops, I planned it poorly. So my meeting starts at 12. I'm going to eat at 11:30. Like, that's not a big deal. You didn't screw up because you didn't fast as long as you said you were going to. You actually succeeded because you adapted your plan according to your circumstances.
Yeah, because life always gets in the way.
Exactly.
So you have to work around it.
Yes. There's a whole chapter like fasting works around your life, not the other way around. So if you want this to turn into a lifestyle, you can't keep canceling plans because it's during your fast or saying no to your kids when they want to go for breakfast. Like, eventually you're going to have to find a way to make fasting work around your life.
Yeah. Marisa, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about today that we haven't mentioned?
Well, I will say that although I've mentioned sleep, I don't think it's talked enough about in the fasting community, and we didn't really talk much about it today. So I have a couple of sayings. One is lack of sleep makes you eat. So we have plenty of research that shows when you are just suffering with insufficient sleep, that to you may not seem insufficient, but to your biology, it is. Typically, this is less than 1 hour of deep sleep and less than 6.5 hours of total sleep. And if your body is starved for sleep, you are going to get increased ghrelin, reduced leptin, so increase in the hormone that makes you attracted to food and tells you that you're hungry, and reduced leptin hormone, which tells you that you're full and satisfied. And so you're going to have hunger pangs earlier in the day. Food's going to be on your mind. That's what ghrelin does. It makes our brain and our head hunger really become dominant. And then your glucose tolerance is going to be reduced. Your insulin sensitivity is going to be reduced. And so you have these like long-term repercussions that start to accumulate throughout the day. Your food decisions are going to look differently because you're going to be more allured by the attraction of simple foods, addicting foods, processed foods. And then you're going to be more likely to overeat when you do eat. And then on top of that, your body is less metabolically capable of handling that challenge appropriately. So besides lack of sleep makes you eat, I also say that shorter sleep times plateau your waistline. And it's because people who are trying really hard to do all of the things are often cutting out sleep on a regular basis. And they're wondering, I'm doing all this stuff. I'm working out. I'm fasting. I'm watching my carbs. How come I'm not losing weight? I'm like, you're not sleeping. Are you finally ready to talk about sleep?
Yeah.
And you're not going to know. I don't care who you are. You're not going to know unless you get a sleep tracker. A sleep tracker will reveal things that you did not know about what's occurring during sleep for you.
Yeah. And I think what's been surprising to me, because I've got an Oura ring, is that even when I think I'm asleep the whole night, I never sleep the whole night. So I always wake up to go to the toilet at least twice. But even take last night, for example, a couple of minutes for the first time, a couple of minutes for the second time. The rest of the time, I think I'm asleep. So I might have been up for 10 minutes in total, but my Oura ring tells me I've been awake for an hour and 10 minutes.
Whoa. How
so about that? I haven't been awake. I've been asleep, but my Oura thinks I've been awake. So I know if I have a good night's sleep, I've been awake for an hour, apparently.
Wow.
Even though I'm not aware of it.
What a valuable insight. I can relate. I mean, my first sleep tracker, I was suffering from chronic fatigue when I first started tracking my sleep. I didn't know what the hell was going on. And my fatigue was so bad, I couldn't hold my body weight up for very long. So I was always like having to lean on something or lie down. And I was crying all day. I would have to take naps all day. I couldn't get anything done. It was just a miserable, miserable life. And it felt like it came on suddenly, but in retrospect, I know it came on very gradually because of shift work that I was doing. But I started tracking my sleep and I saw that I was freaking waking up 20 something times a night.
Wow.
20 something times a night. I was, because I had sleep apnea, I didn't know. So not only was I dealing with shift work, but so circadian disruption, which was for me has been very traumatic. You know, for some people it's not as debilitating, but for me it's very debilitating. Then you add on top of that, I had sleep apnea and I had no idea. Like usually they just say like, if you're overweight, obese, or men are more prone for that, but I didn't fit any of those criteria. So I didn't even think that was possible, but it's just the shape of my mouth, that there's not enough room in my mouth, that my tongue drops back and blocks my throat while I'm sleeping on my back. So I had to train myself to sleep on my side, but without a sleep tracker, I wouldn't have known that I'm waking up so many times a night, which wouldn't have led to me seeing somebody to look further into this. And then my husband to watch me sleeping to discover I had sleep apnea. So I always tell people, like, you really don't know, like once they finally start tracking, I've worked with many clients who finally along the way of us, our journey together, got a sleep tracker. And then they start seeing they're only getting 30 to 40 minutes of deep sleep. I'm like, okay, you don't even know how good it's going to feel when you get over an hour of deep sleep. Like your whole life is going to change.
Yeah.
You are going to feel like your best self. And we can get you there. Your appetite is going to be far more reduced when you're getting over an hour of sleep, but you're going to have much more mental clarity, much more tolerance for stress at work and for your children interrupting you and for things coming up unexpectedly. Like your capabilities with your brain and as a compassionate human being and also someone with self-discipline and willpower are going to double or triple just because you are accomplishing over an hour of deep sleep per night.
Yeah, that's really important.
So yeah, I guess that answers your question.
Yeah. So remind people the title of your book and tell them how they can find you.
Cool. Yeah. So Not So Fast just came out, you guys, at the end of January, early February. And I'm so proud to say I'm now an Amazon bestseller. I reached number two bestseller in the paleo and low carb diet categories. And the subtitle of my book, Not So Fast, is The Smarter, More Gradual Approach to Intermittent Fasting Benefits That Last. So you can get that on Amazon. It's available on paperback and Kindle and hardcover. The Kindle release is March 12th. So by the time you're listening to this, March 12th, 2024, it'll probably already be released. Yeah, so go for it. I'm going to work on Audible and narrate that myself for this summer. So hopefully by the end of the summer, we'll have that out. And go ahead and check out the 90-something five-star reviews I've got in the book and see if it's right for you. I also have a free fasting guide called the Reset Manual that started it all. It's a 25-page guide you can download on my website, marisamoon.com/IF freedom. The IF stands for intermittent fasting. And you can find me on Instagram at Marisa_Moon_.
Perfect. So before we let you go, and I know you have to go, can you share your three top tips with us?
Ooh, three top tips for anything?
Yep. Absolutely. It can be things you've said already this evening, or it can be something new. It's up to you.
Yeah, three top tips. Well, I think there are going to be some things that I've said because they are my top tips. Number one is dietary diversity. So I think you owe it to yourself and your potential to diversify your diet. That includes diversifying the proteins you eat, the protein sources, you know, having ruminants and poultry and wild game and seafood and bivalves and all of those different sources. If you don't like having organ meats or offal, then think about supplementation there. There's a lot of amazing supplements out there, so you can get access to those nutrients too. But vegetables, you know, fermented, cooked, raw, slow cooked, cultured. And I think there's just so much out there that can make it possible for you to do that if you don't have time to make it yourself, that you have to try new grocery stores. So just like diversify your sources for food and the types of food that you eat. That's very important.
Yeah.
Number two is to get a sleep tracker. Wow, broken record. But that's true. Like if you don't have one, you really want to consider, there's an app called Sleep Score that can work without a sleep tracking device. It can also work with your Apple Watch to give you more data about your sleep. There's an app called Rise Sleep App by some incredible sleep research that coined the terms sleep debt. And it tells you across a week how much sleep debt you're accumulating. And then it translates that into a percentage of energy potential you are operating on that week. So it becomes glaringly obvious that this app is telling you have 8 hours of sleep debt this week, which means you're at 46% of your energy potential. It wakes you up to the fact that you are robbing yourself. This is self-sabotage.
Yeah.
So I do think sleep tracking or, the many other ways I just shared is essential. And then third is
necessarily need an Oura ring.
No, you absolutely do not need an Oura ring, and Fitbit watches seem to do a pretty good job on that. There's lots of ways, so do check out resources that are, applicable to you,
yeah,
or accessible to you. And then the third one, oh man, that's tough. It would probably be self-development of some sort. I think that a lot of people work to make money, but they're not thinking about what they need to nurture their self, their soul, like who they are or their potential, like which can be, hidden in your hobbies or in your passions. Like it doesn't have to be, don't try to think of things that make you money. Think about things that make you feel fulfilled or make you feel like you're expressing a part of yourself that's dormant. A lot of moms, experience this because they've had to put themselves last in order to get through upbringing of their children. But after a while, they don't even know what their favorite things are or what their style is or, what brings them joy. Like they just really don't even know anymore. And I think it's so important to just take little indulgences to pursue curiosities of your own and like nurture that part of your self-development, because in the end, as we age, those are sometimes the only things that will bring us satisfaction and enhance our quality of life, is just those little like things that make us uniquely you.
Yeah. I love that. Have curiosity to find out what it is that makes you tick. Mm-hmm. And especially if you have been putting your children first, because they're soon going to leave home. 10, 20 years time, they're going to leave home. And so you need something else to fill that place that they've taken up.
Yeah, it's truly important, especially as you're transitioning perimenopause and postmenopause. Like your body is screaming at you to be selfish. It's screaming at you to start doing things that you want to do and doing things that you want to do with your time.
Yeah.
Being selfish with your time, protecting your time. That goes hand in hand, I think. It's like stop letting time really ruin our day. And instead think about where you can take the control back and give yourself some freedom of time. That would be a beautiful experience.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to take up huge amounts of time to do that. Even you start with a few minutes a day for yourself and build on it.
Yeah.
Marisa, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jackie. And I like how you say my name, Marisa. That's how my Italian family says it.
I got it wrong the first time because I said Marisa, because that's how I would say it. But I heard you say it. So
Marisa. Marisa just sounds like a different person to me. So even though it's very natural for people to pronounce it that way, I say, it's not my name. It's Marisa.
Marisa.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
It would be great if you could support us through Patreon. Go to patreon.com/fabulouslyketo and you can choose the monthly amount you wish.
Can you recommend a guest we can interview? If you can, click on the link in the show notes to send us your recommendation.
Would you like to join our Facebook group? Search for Fabulously Keto on Facebook. Our Facebook page is called Fabulously Keto and you can follow us there. Or you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Fabulously Keto. Or follow us on Instagram, Fabulously Keto 1. Did you enjoy the show?
Let us know you listened by tagging us in your Insta story or Instagram post using the handle FabulouslyKeto1 and the hashtag TFKP. All the links are on the website and in the show notes.
If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, click the subscribe button. Reviews help us to be found and reach new listeners. Please leave a review of our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. We appreciate you taking the time and read them all.
Disclaimer. The information in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing in this podcast can be taken as advice. Whether our guests are doctors, healthcare professionals or not, they're only sharing their own opinions and stories, and this does not constitute a doctor-patient relationship. It's always best to seek professional medical advice should you wish to make any changes to your current medication or treatments. Also speak to your own doctor if you have any concerns about your health or you wish to make lifestyle changes, especially if you're taking medication.